I think the monks continually or repeatedly talk about the world as it is and all of its confusion and perplexity and how we bring our training, our Buddhist practice, to situations. So that's what I'm going to talk about. The talk is based on our world in terms of, in light of the pandemic, you know, the climate change, violence, lots of violence seems to be happening. And it's causing a lot of confusion and confliction. And it's actually scary sometimes. So we're living in a very different world than, say, that I grew up with. And I don't think that's true for a lot of people. But this is what we've got. And I want to talk my the title of this talk is The Mold of Self and Going On Beyond. And the self is in quotes because we as Buddhists have different ways of looking at that very word, that troublesome word. So the mold is by definition a mold, in case it's not, this isn't mold or mildew, you know. It's actually a frame that around which an object is constructed. So that's the mold. And then the self is defined as grasping at ideas of an I or mine or me or my as being inherently existent. Once we designate something as mine, like our bodies, minds, material objects, ideas, or relationships, we relate to them in a different way. There's some kind of connection that seems to shift when all of a sudden we are calling something a my or a me. And I think most of us can recognize that, or I hope so. So I was reminded of this kind of an example of this is when I was in high school, and we all were trying to have boyfriends. And so I had a boyfriend, and I don't even know who it was at this point, but it was somebody. And there was something that you had this awkwardness that kind of went, you went through that. And then there was a point where you got pretty familiar with each other, and the possessiveness can overtake that relationship. And guess what? It really changes things kind of, I think, to the worse if you have that idea of this is my boyfriend or he gave me this. You know, we used to wear those rings, going steady rings. You know, you had them on a necklace around your neck, you know, with his ring on there like it was some kind of a statement of who you belong to or who belonged to him. But anyway, that's what we're working with when we talk about the mold of self and how it can become something other than what we wanted it to become or desired it to become. Now, I'm going to explore a little bit today this idea of self and a me and a my or mine. And one thing that is good to remember that you can have a condition. And I'm thinking of one condition would be something like a prison. That's a condition. And you have a prisoner who has one view of the prison. And then you have the prison guard who has another view of the prison. And they are not the same. However, I think they have a basis of similarity in that they have an expectation, each of the other, and it's in our expectation of the other is based on our reaction to that expectation. And I think that's something to keep in mind, that we kind of set ourselves up for things to happen a particular way because we're looking at people with an expectation. And I found a word that really seems to kind of help with working through the quagmire of what a self is or what it isn't. And that is that this idea of having rigid ideas, because that's where we get into closing off a broader world. So by grasping on an idea tightly, we exclude all kinds of things, like a lot of things, and that brings conflict and confusion. And I feel that the self, this idea of self, is a notion that is cultivated in our culture, and it is brought about by fear. A lot of it's being really afraid. Afraid of change, afraid of threatened by what the other is thinking, what the other may do. And sometimes it even feels like you're cornered like an animal without an escape. So these things are thoughts that are helpful because they don't really kind of tell you what a self is. And in Buddhism, there is, with meditation and practice, there is no concrete thing that we can call a self. However, that's what we have, and we have to work through these ideas that we've been raised with. And I say that there is a lot of confusion and fear, and just thinking the world's a strange place today, which I think it is. But I also have this thought. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have a shred of peace, well-being, and at easeness in our lives, in the lives that we hear and see about others? Wouldn't that be nice? Well, our ideas, our rigid ideas of self, are the things that cause us to not be able, open enough to seeing things in a different way, so that we're not so imprisoned by our ideas and opinions, if we can open up and allow other things to enter. Because you can't have fear in a very strong way, or anger, or despair. You can't have that in place and also be open to allowing something else to happen. It fills up our head, and it fills up our ideas where there's no room to move. No wonder we have people that lash out and get violent, you know? They don't have anywhere to go. And I think all of us can relate to that anger. You don't have anywhere to go. You don't know what to do. So that is part of what I want to talk about. Now, I have a poem that I want to talk about. This is Going On Beyond. And it's written, or it comes from a book, The First Free Women, Poems of the Early Buddhist Nuns, which is, this book is based on one of the sacred texts of early Buddhism. So that goes back like 2,500 years, and is the world's oldest collection of women's literature. And the chapter the section I wanted to talk about is a nun. Her name is Gutta, and that's translated as guardian. Her name is Gutta, or guardian, and that's a monastic name given to her when she became a nun. And this is the poem. Going forth is no game. We leave whole lives behind. Not just people and possessions. All your wants, all your fears, all the little rituals that get you through the day and tuck you in at night. Only see that all these pretty wooden pieces aren't you and don't belong to you. They belong to the game. I know it's comforting to count up all the squares, run your fingers along the edge of the board, and plan out all your moves ahead of time. The world beyond the table only seems dark, like empty space. It's okay to be afraid. beautiful poem that points to going beyond the ideas of self, things that are unsettling, confusing, conflicting, that get us into trouble because of our rigidity of self. Now, this poem may seem like a darkness, something we probably don't want to go to and want to avoid, but it also offers us the opportunity to let go of the negativity that burdens us. And there, in that spot of empty space, is a place we can begin to learn how to make our lives better. Alice Walker, who is a well-known writer, carries on with this thought, takes it one step forward. Together we move forward. We are here now, in this scary, into some quite new and never imagined place. What do we do with our fear? Do we turn on others or towards others? Do we turn on others or toward others? Do we share our awakening or only our despair? Do we share our awakening or only our despair? The choice is ours. Now, I have a couple of stories that I would like to relate to you that are encouraging. Because it's one thing to notice that our self is gets us into trouble through conflict and confusion, and also that if we let go of things, that you can find that it's pretty empty, and, well, that doesn't sound like very much like a place you'd like to go. However, that's not what our Buddhist practice is asking of us. It's asking something different, and that is to, let me read the story and you'll find out. This is a story from a magazine article, and it is has some Christian context, but I think it makes a really good point, so this is what it has to say. Growing up, I tried to be many things. Oh, by the way, the title of this is called Fitting In. Growing up, I tried to be many things. Class clown, athlete, great student, but none seemed to stick. I had friends, but I felt there was some place I ought to be occupying in the order of things that I just couldn't find. This uncertainty about my fit persisted through most of college as well and affected my schoolwork, self-care, and relationships. I am a prayerful person, but I didn't feel I knew how to pray about this abstract issue. I even felt a little ashamed and thought maybe I needed to find my fit before I could effectively commune with God. Then I participated in a college study abroad program. After the academic part ended, I was going to spend more time abroad, so I asked well-traveled friends for tips. The best tip I got? To spend time looking for what I could give rather than what I could get. This change in perspective affected the whole scope of my travel. For the first time, I felt that I did fit in, because there was always some way I could give, no matter how small. So that's a different direction that we can take, and I think it's good, really good advice for all of us to not be so concerned with ourself and ideas of self, but learn that by giving that we can, in fact, become fit in with the world that is a strange place. And I leave that up to all of us to find that way. Another story that I like, and I have here, is different, and it's called Practicing Goodness, because that is what Buddhists do. Part of our practice is to practice goodness, and this particular story is from Stillness Flowing, which is Ajahn Chah's biography. He was a well-known Buddhist monk in Thailand, and he died in 1992. So this section he calls the good person. And he says, where is the good person? It's lying within us. If we're good, then wherever we go, the goodness goes with us. That's good to contemplate. People may blame or praise us, but whatever they do, the goodness remains. Without goodness, our mind constantly wanders. We're angered by criticism and pleased by praise. Through knowing where the good person dwells, we have a principle to rely on in letting go of thought. If we go somewhere where people dislike us or say things about us, then we don't consider that to be their good or bad. We know that goodness and badness lie within us. Nobody can know us as well as we know ourselves. This was Ajahn Chah when he was a young man. He was learning his Buddhist practice and was off on his own walking through the forests of Thailand as a forest-dwelling monk, and had this revelation that he could not be so taken in with what other people thought, but within him that goodness is always there. And I think that is something for us to rely on, not just say, well, I've got to cultivate being a bodhisattva or being compassionate, but also that it's there. The more we do it, the more it's available to us. It's a refuge, a good one. Now, I have some other things I wanted to bring to light here. One is how we can work together. And we don't have to do anything except not get too far down the road with our own strong ideas about things. And this is another story that occurred to me, was a lot of fun, actually. It's a true story. The monks were invited to go on a river rafting trip down the Klamath River. This was, I don't know how many years ago. And so there were six of us that decided that we would like to participate. So we went down, we got, the boat was an inflatable kayak, and we had a helmsman who not only steered the boat so we would avoid rocks and the like, but it also, he was the one that navigated that and told us what we should do. And so we all worked together to hear his orders and do them because we trusted his experience, judgment, which affected all of us. We didn't run into any big boulders. We'd get caught in dangerous white rapids. And the thing that was so amazing to me is that we all were not kind of individuals trying to row the boat. But we worked together, and there was no question about it because we didn't want to hit a rock, you know. And it actually was a lot of fun, and there was a great joy in it afterwards that it wasn't not only fun going down the river, but also together, but also the joy of kind of working together and the harmony that was happening right then. It wasn't like somebody said, you know, he would say something like, to the right, so the ones on the right would start paddling to avoid a rock. We wouldn't say, the six of us wouldn't turn around and say, you know, I don't feel like it right now. You know, I'd like to have a snack, or, you know, I have to go to the bathroom. You know, it's one of those things that we have around here, but there was just a joy that we just were willingly, at that moment, we worked together, and it was, you know, it wasn't a big deal, it wasn't a problem, we just did it, and it was, I feel there's some, inspiration there that we can, in the real world, work together in a way that is, it builds connections with other people in a good way. And skills, too. So let's see here. I have I just have one more story, and then and this is these are all true stories. They're not made up. This is a story that I think is pertinent to now because it's a story about belonging, connection, and being isolated and the pandemic. And this is a campground story. And this was last summer. Two of my friends I know went to a campground. And this would have been during the pandemic with all of the precautions about wearing masks, social distancing, and not going to places of group gatherings. But they went there and because they worked out, you know, that they wouldn't have be threatened by other people giving them the pandemic or the virus or them giving other people the virus. So they went to the campground and it was full of people. But they found their reserve campsite, which was an appropriate distance from the next campsite. They got settled and then they went on a hike on a trail. They came back and got ready for the evening with a campfire. One of my friends, you know, they were sitting by the campfire, and one of my friends, she stood up and she looked around and she noticed all these campfires in the camp with families. And she just had this joy of moment where she realized that they were people just like her, and she really missed being around people. You know, and it was just this wonderful image of that connection. Like, these people were no different than what they were doing. You know, and there was like this moment that she just missed what she had earlier, you know, with all the people and all of its whatever it brings. But there's something about us. We are humans. We're group animals, really, and we need each other. And we can't work in an isolation, and it's not good for us to be too isolated because we get too far into our own ideas about things that I don't feel is that healthy. But we can work through our ideas of self. We can work through how to cultivate worthwhile lives, and we can move into these things in a very, very real way. This is not airy-fairy type stuff. It's more grounded in reality. We can do this. Now, I have a picture here that one of the monks pointed out, and I'll have to, is it focused on the, oh, it is, oh, good. So let me just kind of go back here. So I didn't, we had a nice ceremony this morning, excuse me, with all sorts of images surrounded by, on the walls. So we're surrounded by compassion, which is not a bad thing this morning. All different kinds of images. This particular one, I've seen over and over the years. Yeah. And you can see that she has a black outline that actually is the characters of the scripture that we sang today. And it's a scripture of compassion. Now, the other thing that I didn't notice that somebody pointed out to me is she's not doing anything. Like, a lot of the images are, you know, water and trying to stay afloat on a lotus leaf in the ocean and riding a dragon and pouring water and, you know, taking care of young children that are looking up to her. But this one, she's not doing anything. And what was pointed out that I really like is she doesn't need to. In her countenance, she's just simply sitting still, but she's not in a closed-off world all by herself. She's actually, if you look at the picture, she's looking out in a very gentle and compassionate way. In other words, she's found what she needs in her life. She's completely at ease. And there's a worthwhileness that is there. And there's nothing that needs to be, you don't get the sense that she has to fix something within herself. She's okay, you know. And I feel that this is an image, and maybe it's an ideal image. It's very inspirational to me and helpful and something to aspire to. That with Buddhist practice, the meditation, some of the stories that I talked about, previously, that with that practice, we can transform ourselves into out of being kind of needy and grabbing after things, and just have this contentment that actually can move through the world in a realistic way. We don't have to carry all these ideas that we have been carrying around, that maybe relooking at them and seeing if there is a better way, and here's an offering of a possibility. So that's what I have for you all today. Thank you.